name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 183. I'm recording it on Friday, October 16th, 2009. The P10 level today is 19. That's less than exciting for long-term stock investors. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of the selection, Winter Reflections. The title of the podcast is Investment Discussion Boards Ban Honest Posting on Valuations. This is a, I've written a lot of articles at the site. I think it's a little under 200, maybe 180, something like that. And not all of them on investing, but at least half of them, probably 100 on investing. My favorite article at the site is an article with the title of this podcast, Investment Discussion Boards, Ban Honest Posting on Valuations. And it's at the, if you want to read the article, I urge you to do so. It's at the Banned at Motley Fool section of the website. And it's my favorite article at the site. I think you could, I have a follow-up article called Stock Panic, Up Close and Personal. And that one is at the Stock Drunk section of the website. Both of them are good, but I prefer the first one. I prefer the investment discussion boards, Ban Honest Posting. I almost, you often hear me talk about the calculators. I think the calculators are the most powerful learning tools at the website because you can use them over and over again and you'll develop new insights every time you do. That's at least been my experience. I feel that way about this article. There's 101 snippets of posts by community members in the Retire Early and Indexing Discussion Board communities expressing a desire that honest posting on valuations be permitted at our boards. And boy, if you're going to talk about an idea that you would think would be 100% non-controversial, that would be it. How could anyone object? Valuations is probably the most important thing you need to know to invest effectively. How could anyone possibly object to the idea of allowing honest posting on that question if it's the most important thing you need to know how to invest your retirement money? But yet, it is so controversial. Mentioning the effect of valuations on retirement planning is so controversial that it's flat out banned. And it's not only banned at one place. It's banned at Morningstar.com. It's banned at Bogleheads.org. It's banned at Motley Fool, Fool.com. It's banned at IndexUniverse.com. A number of blogs, Free Money Finance blog has banned. There's another one, I forget the name of it. So anyway, to me, this tells me something. It tells me there's something terribly, terribly wrong with the model we're using if it causes such intense emotion and negative emotion, not just any old emotion, the most negative emotion imaginable. So I just, you know, this is sort of how I got started building the rational investing model because the thought was, we don't just have a problem here of the safe withdrawal rate studies getting the numbers wrong. That's bad enough. That's going to cause millions of busted retirements in the event that, you know, stocks perform in the future, anything at all, as they've always performed in the past. But that's a little thing in relative terms compared to the entire investing model causing such intense emotion among people interested in the subject of stock investing. They wouldn't be posting at these boards if they weren't interested. So boy, what a mess we've got. And so I look to comments like this to learn. And I was saying, this article is almost like a calculator in that you can go over these 101 comments. And I think every time you read it, it would be a lengthy article to read. But every time you read it, you would learn something new because your mind can only take in so much at one time and you would focus on different aspects of the question. So what I'm going to try to do in this podcast is go through the 101 comments. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it through all of them. Because 101 is a lot to go through, and I, I have strong reactions to some of them. But I'll go through as many as I can. I'll skip around and just offer some observations about what it tells us about investing. And you see, this is the key to rational investing. What makes rational investing rational is that we do not ignore human emotion. And that's what the passive model does. The passive model ignores human emotion and therefore gets it all wrong, because investing is largely an emotional endeavor. And if you ignore it, you can't get it right. What we do here is, I have a podcast called Behavioral Finance 2.0, and the idea is we need to take the principles of behavioral finance and get serious about applying them in the investing realm. And this article does that, because what we're doing is, we're taking live comments that took place in real-time discussions where people were trying to learn about investing, and we now have a record of these comments, and we can look at the emotional content and thereby develop insights about how investing works, not in the classroom, not in these textbooks, and not in the speeches given by these academics or whatever. We can look at how investing works in the real world. People who post on discussion boards are generally people who have a real-world interest in investing, and this is how they handle being exposed to the different ideas. All right, enough preface. Comment number one. So you can read the – I'd urge you to read the article itself, but I'm going to comment on some of the items. One of my favorite comments, and that's the reason I put it first, is one by a fellow who calls himself Mephisto – well, I can't read the name. I know it's. I think it's a synonym for the devil, I believe. I'm not sure, but Mephistopheles. I guess that's close. That's close, I think. He made this comment in June of 2006 at the Vanguard Diehards board. Wonderful comment, in my opinion. Rob's the man. Never in the history of the Diehards forum has one poster, always making civil and well thought out posts, managed to irritate so many, without anyone being able to articulate a good reason why. Well, that's what I said in the preface. In other words, this guy is pointing out that, I'm very careful never to post abusively. I don't think there's anyone alive on planet Earth today who is more opposed to abusive posting on the internet than Rob Bennett, largely, partly just because of my nature, is sort of a non-confrontational nature. I just don't like friction. I think, first of all, I don't like it, and I don't enjoy it at all. And secondly, I think it hurts learning, and I love learning, so that's a second reason for me not to like it. And then third, my personal experience on the internet has underlined to me how bad it can be, how much trouble it can cause, how much destruction it can cause. So, I'm very careful. And I'm the poster he's referring to, and always making civil and well thought out. I like to think my poster well thought out, but yet the most, I think it would be fair to describe me as certainly the most controversial poster in the history of money discussions on the internet. I don't think there's anyone comes close. I think arguably the most controversial poster in the history of the internet. There probably are subjects I don't know about where there's extreme controversy, but in the money field, I don't think there's anything it could possibly compare to the Great Debate. I don't think there's anything. You know, if you know of something, please let me know, and I will take that back. But hundreds of thousands of posts, dozens of discussion boards, bannings, death threats, all this sort of thing. So he's asking, Mephistopheles is here asking the question I think everyone should be asking, universal. Everyone should be saying, what the heck is going on here? What the heck is going on here? And you don't hear that. I always think of that guy at the Munivator blog, and he gave this answer a couple weeks ago. He said, oh, it's not my fight. Well, if you've got money invested in the market, it's your fight, because if you don't know what's going on, you don't know what's going on. How can you put your retirement money down if you don't even understand the basics of the game? But what is going on, in a sense, my take is, people think that investing is just a numbers game. They think, oh, I don't need to look at this emotional. That's not my fight. I don't need to read posts like that. Well, you do, because if most of us are governed primarily by emotion, then the numbers, you can have all the numbers in the world, it's not going to mean a darn thing, because we'll just doctor the studies to produce the numbers we like. And that's just what we've done during the passive investing era. We have tons and tons and tons of studies telling us that passive investing, quote-unquote, works. And if you look at them, you find they're all doctored. Not deliberately so. They're doctored because of the emotional pain it would cause us to face the realities that valuations really do affect long-term returns, just as our common sense says they must. And so if you did the study straight, guess what all the studies would show? The first one would show valuations affect. Second one, valuations affect. On and on and on and on. And we don't want to hear that in a wild bull market. We want to hear baby talk. We want to hear, oh, well, it might work to invest passively. You never know. I mean, nobody can know. And so that's the anger. You see, Rob Bennett is this guy who came to the internet totally not knowing, with no intent. But what I ended up doing was reporting accurately, you know, what the numbers say about how to invest effectively. And you would think people would love to hear it. And of course, in a neutral world, they would. It benefits every single person. But in the real world that we live in today, people have invested money according to the flawed theory, and hearing the realities is very, very upsetting. So read that comment and ponder, what does it mean? And I think if you just, you know, that it, I said the article's long, well, just read one comment, just read the first comment, but don't read it once. Read it over three or four times and think about it. You know, what could this mean? Can you come up with an alternate explanation from the one I just put forward? If you can, fine. If you cannot explain this comment, I would argue that perhaps you shouldn't have too much money invested in the stock market, because if you cannot come to terms with the realities, you should not be risking your retirement money. And these comments that were put to real live discussion boards are realities. Every bit as much as a study, you know, with peer review attached to it. The emotional realities are real, just as the mathematical realities are real. All right, comment number two. It looks like a bunch of new people logged in for the express purpose of antagonizing one guy. Come on, Morningstar, remove those users. That's a comment by Focus. Well, that was true. We had, what happened is Vanguard Diehards board had a fairly good reputation. There always was abusive posting there. I've heard from people that, know the history. But they had a good reputation. Bogleheads.org, Vanguard Diehards board was basically abandoned because Morningstar was not willing to ban me. And so the so-called leaders formed a new board called Bogleheads.org, and that's where they post today. And Bogleheads.org is an extremely popular board, and also has a fairly good reputation for not allowing abusive posting. They don't really need to have abusive posting at Bogleheads, because if anyone posts things they don't want to hear, they just can eliminate them. They don't have Morningstar anymore overseeing it. And when Morningstar was overseeing it, there was sort of a check on how far they could go in terms of, you know, because they there were limits to what Morningstar would permit. Morningstar, I don't know, you know, you can argue, did they allow honest posting or not? They did and they didn't. They allowed the words to appear, but they also allowed abusive posting against those posting honestly. So it was sort of a mixed bag. Today, Morningstar has flat out banned honest posting. After they left, after the exodus, Morningstar stepped in and said, okay, we'll ban honest posting too. Which I, of course, disagree with, but that's the way it played out. But, you know, there was a case. John Graney was bringing in goons to disrupt these threads, deliberately doing so. And a lot of community members were saying, not a huge number, but a significant number, were saying, hey, they're ruining our board. Why don't we do something? And again, you know, it underlines that earlier point. Why did people not react? Why did people not act in defense of the board community? Well, a big thing is leadership. The leaders wanted the board disrupted. The leaders wanted these discussions stomped out. And humans follow leaders. And so, and Morningstar, the poster here, Focus, is saying, why doesn't Morningstar step in? Well, Morningstar should probably answer for Morningstar, but I think part of it is, it's an important question, because if Morningstar would play it straight, and I don't mean just Morningstar, but all of these site owners, if they would play it straight, the problem never would have gotten so out of hand. So why didn't they play it straight? Part of it may be that they don't really understand, you know, how big the problem is, the investing problem. I don't think they do. But part of it is, they want their board to be popular. They want to, you know, a short way of saying it is they want to make money. That's how you make money. The board's popular, your advertisements get more clicks. But what is popular at a time when stocks are insanely dangerous? What's the most popular advice? Buy lots of stocks. Because whenever, what makes stocks insanely dangerous are high prices, high valuations. And stocks are only highly valued when people are you know, overinvested in them. So it's only popularity that makes stocks dangerous. It's the only thing. If you only invested in stocks when they were not insanely popular, you would always get a good return on your investment. So there's a conflict there between marketing considerations, you know, making your site popular, and giving accurate advice, which is when stocks are popular, you better be wary. You better lower your allocation. So that fundamental conflict drives everything in stock investing. All stock investing is, most people are, you know, basically goodwill, and they want to give advice, good advice. So the good advice might be go with a 20% stock allocation today. You know, stocks are insanely overvalued. You get a far better long-term return and much safer asset classes. 20% is probably right. But popularity says, you know, maybe argue for 100% allocation or borrow to have 110% allocation. So what many quote unquote experts will say is, well, 80% or 70% is good. They don't go with 100. They moderate it a little bit, but they're not willing to give the accurate numbers because they'd be out of business. They couldn't get a job. They couldn't sell their product. This is a real problem. If we want to solve the problem of investing, we have to come up with ways to solve the marketing factor. You see, if everyone marketed, say honestly, there would be no competitive disadvantage in giving the honest story, the straight story, if everyone else did it. But in a world in which there's no penalty for promoting passive investing, when there's no penalty, how are you going to survive? How are you going to compete? When one, you know, passive investing is pure emotion. There's never been any evidence. You'll hear there's studies. There's never been any study showing long-term timing doesn't work. Never. There never can be one. A rational human mind cannot even imagine such a thing. So, you know, but it sells. So you've got a conflict. And that's something as a society we're going to need to work through. Do we want marketing campaigns to be effective for the stock selling industry, or do we want the middle class to be able to make a decent return on their retirement money? Which is it? Can't have both. And if we impose, whether it's government restrictions on the promotion of passive investing, or my preference would be social taboo on the promotion of passive investing, some sort of limits on how far the marketing campaigns will go. I personally believe the stock selling industry would love that. A lot of people in the stock selling industry are very intelligent people, hardworking people, basically good people. And if they could give the straight story, I think there's nothing they would like more. This is my personal sense of things, and based on a certain amount of experience. So that marketing conflict comes through in that comment. What is it? Comment number two. Read again. I could do a whole podcast on that. Read the comment and reflect, and you'll learn about investing more than you will reading, all the conventional investing advice. It just repeats itself over and over and over again, in my opinion, Rob Bennett's opinion. Comment number three, this is the way the heavy fist works. You make a few examples, and everyone falls into line. No need for more shocks. It's like the invisible fence for dogs. Well, that's a very good comment. What they do, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, they allow honest posting, you know, look at this post. This post is honest, and it's true, of course. There are many honest posts every single day. What the people do who are trying to stomp out honest posting is they make an example of the most informed, the most effective posters. And they say, we'll destroy these people. And anyone who gets any ideas in their head will know, don't go there. You'll be destroyed. And that's the way, you know, that's the way the game is played. So, yeah, very good point. So a lot of people will puzzle. They'll say, Rob, you know, yeah, you know, it does seem strange that honest posting's been banned. It is strange, but Rob, you know, this sounds like a conspiracy theory. I mean, how could they do this? It's just, the internet's open. How could you possibly stop honest? It's just not possible. Well, it doesn't seem like it's possible. You have to go in and examine it. And what is, you know, if you had thousands of people doing it, it wouldn't be possible. That's true. But you don't need to stop thousands. You can, if you can stop a dozen, and they have, if you look at the history of our boards, Ben Solar was a wonderful poster. He was blocked. Fool Me Once was wonderful. He was blocked. Petey Person was wonderful. He was blocked. John Walter Russell was wonderful. He was blocked. Mike Relepsis was wonderful. He was blocked. Mikey was wonderful. He was blocked. John D. Craig was wonderful. He was blocked. Rob Bennett was blocked. You know, if you can block a dozen and you're vicious enough, you get a reputation, there's you know, probably 10 times that number. There's 120 who will then be silent or pull their punches at least. And there may, you know, so that way you never, the rational ideas, the effective investing strategies never gain momentum. They never become well known. They're mentioned. There are people that mention them. But if they can't discuss them, if it's just a post somewhere where somebody mentions it, it never really catches on. And as long as it doesn't catch on, it really doesn't do those who are promoting passive investing any significant damage. So they can live with that. They really only have to stop a small number. They have to stop the leaders. So it's an it's you know, what's he say here? They make a few examples and everyone falls into line. Comment number 4. The majority opinion rarely needs protection from a constitution, laws, or rules. It is the minority opinion that needs to be protected. I sure do agree with that. We talk about free speech in the United States, and you know, I had a situation where I contacted this group to bring a lawsuit. What was the name of the group? Electronic Frontier Foundation. And that's what they're there for. They're there to help people whose First Amendment rights have been, you know, attacked on the internet. And I called them and they were not willing to help. And I think they should help. I don't think there's any case of, well, in U.S. history, there are cases that of worse cases where free speech has been blocked. But in terms of money matters, I don't think there's ever been a case like this, where so many people are going to suffer such horrible financial losses solely because of a violation of the First Amendment, that somebody's First Amendment rights have been violated, that, you know, I and all the others, you know, thousands of people in our community who have expressed a desire for honest posting on these questions. But Electronic Frontier Foundation has what I would call a quirky understanding, quirky but widespread today, apparently, understanding of the First Amendment, where if you're in the minority, it doesn't really matter. The First Amendment's for the majority. In other words, the majority in any board may stomp out the minority, and that's fine. You can't possibly, you know, it would be a terrible, terrible violation. If any passive investor were banned solely for posting honestly, I mean, you would hear it, the screams. You'd hear it across the world. But someone presenting a minority viewpoint, rational investing is obviously not the dominant model today. Now, that's not a problem, not an issue. Not an issue. First Amendment is for majorities. And I think it's just the opposite. I think this poster is correct. The whole purpose of the First Amendment, the majority doesn't need protection. They're in the majority. What protections do they need? Who's going to try to stop them? How could I possibly intimidate the passives when 9 out of 10 think they're right? What the group that needs protection by the First Amendment is minority speech. But on the internet, you won't get too far making that case. I'm afraid to say. I think there are a lot of people who understand it, but frankly, they are intimidated by the tactics that are used by the majority. So, First Amendment that protects majorities is a First Amendment that doesn't do the job. Comment number 5. It's always easier to be with the thinking of the larger group. When ideas are wrong but aligned together with the mass, there is a warmth and consolation to be found in the midst of everyone being wrong together. Very true. Big problem in investing. Again, it goes to this question of emotion is dominant in investing decision making. Most of us are scared to invest. Investing is scary. We're putting our money at risk, and it's scary. And what we want, of course, we want good returns, but none of us are confident that we know what it takes. So what we want is emotional consolation. We want to know that we haven't made fools of ourselves, that we haven't done the wrong thing. How do we get that? We often get that by being part of a group, a large group. And then even if we're wrong, you know, in this stock crash, a lot of people said, oh, well, we were wrong. They say, hey, we're all wrong together. It eases the emotional pain to be wrong with millions of others. It doesn't ease the financial pain. In an objective sense, it doesn't help at all. But emotionally, it's a great relief to know, hey, I was wrong, but John Bogle was just as wrong as me, and Bill Bernstein was just as wrong as me, and Jonathan Clements was just as wrong as me. So, hey, I'm no dummy. Whereas if you had gone counter to them, if you had said, well, you know, say in 96, you said valuations are insane, I'm going to a 20% stock allocation in 1996, and then stocks went up 30% in 96. I'm just making the numbers up. 20% in 97, 25% in 98, 30% in 99, and you say, ah, Bogle says you don't have to change your allocation, and millions of people listened to him, and I did, and I went down to 20% allocation, and look, stocks have doubled in these 4 years, and I missed the boat. Now, you did the right thing. What you did was rational. Stocks were insanely dangerous in 96. And the proper thing to do was to go with a low stock allocation. And if you had held to that, but in 2008, you would have went ahead of the people who listened to Bogle. You would have went ahead. But it would have taken some time. That's the way it often works. It takes time for the rational strategy to work. The emotional strategy can work for short periods of time. The benefit that the rationals have is they can retire 5 years sooner. The strategy works. The benefit the passives have is when it works, they've got money, which is nice, and when it doesn't work, they've got emotional consolation that millions of others are wrong with them. But the rationals, when the rationals are quote-unquote wrong, in the short term, they don't have millions with them. They, you know, I used to have a friend, good friend of mine that I used to work with, Brian, and we used to go out to lunch and, you know, I told him about all this stuff. I was, you know, this was the days when the early days of development of valuation-informed indexing. And I said, Brian, I went to a zero stock allocation myself because of my circumstances. And Brian would just laugh at me and he'd say, Rob, you know, you understand that you're nuts, right? Stocks went up 30% last year. You got nothing. You understand that you're crazy, right? I just want to be clear. And I'd say, yeah, Brian, I know what John Bogle says. I also know what the historical data says here. And I'd even fold it up and keep it in my pocket. And I'd pull it out for confirmation. I'd say, look, Brian, here are the numbers. He'd say, okay, Rob, that's what the numbers say. That's what the historical data says. I get it, but I just want to be clear. You do understand you're nuts, right? So if you're going to invest rationally, there are going to be times when you are going to feel emotional. You pay for those returns is one way of putting it. People say, oh, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Well, the extra returns that you get from valuation-informed indexing are not really free because you pay for it with emotional suffering. You know, the longer you do it, the more confident you will get, and then the emotional suffering sort of goes away. You know, you get to a point where it really doesn't faze you anymore. But, and if everyone followed it, it wouldn't. The emotional pain would go away because we would all sort of buck each other up. That's what I would like. I'd like to have all these people on the internet forming communities to buck each other up to encourage people to invest rationally rather than the opposite. Passive is to encourage emotional investing. Rational is to encourage effective investing. We need that. We need that emotional bucking up. But until we get there, you know, it can be hard at times. There's a you know consolation to be found in being with the group, even when you're wrong. Okay. I don't know. I'm going to have to start skipping some. Comment 6. Morningstar has lost a significant number of folks who frequent this website in a very short period of time because of all the abusiveness. I added that last phrase. That's not just a matter of prestige. It translates into dollars and cents. There's a lot of advertising here. And Morningstar, like other commercial sites, receives a revenue stream for the eyeballs that visit these forums. Well, that's just another statement of the dilemma I mentioned above, the marketing versus giving effective advice, always in conflict in the stock investing realm, always. When stocks are hated, the long-term value proposition is extremely high. When stocks are loved, the long-term value proposition is extremely low. Most times they're in the middle, and that means there's a strong long-term value proposition. Not amazing, but good, very good. And, you know, that's the normal situation. But at the extremes, the common advice is the opposite of reality. Here's a quote from a guy named Farmer Ed. That somebody was complaining that my posting accurate safe withdrawal rate numbers was disruptive. And Farmer Ed said no. He says, I find it much more disruptive that we have a whole posse of internet sheriffs that feel every time he posts he should be attacked, criticized, and so forth. These are the disruptive people. And if anyone was to be banned, they are the first I would suggest. People, if you think he is a troll, ignore him. Why is that so difficult to understand? Or are you all saying you don't like what he has to say, so nobody else has a right to hear it either? Who exactly died and left you all in charge of other people's opinions? Well, that gets to the nub of it. Anyone can ignore a post on the internet. You know, you just skip it. So there are people, of course, who think my advice is terrible. There's no question about it. And of course, they have every right in the world not to read it. They have every right to refute it if they choose to, as long as they follow the rules of the board, the rules of civility. But no one has a right to engage in highly abusive posting. And Farmer Ed's pointing that out. But why, you know, there should be universal agreement on that. And there's not. If you ask these people in general terms, do you agree with what Farmer Ed said? I think 90% of the population would agree. But put it in investing terms. Put it in, you know, the people engaging in the abusive posting are passive investors, and the one at which the attacks are being, you know, levied are, you know, is a proponent of valuation-informed indexing, and then the numbers swing. Then the numbers swing. Comment number 8. That's incredible, Hocus. They put up a board. Hocus is me. Hocus was my screen name. They put up a board just to mock you? I don't think I've ever seen that one before. That's what I call mature website management. You should be flattered. You really should. You've got that guy so messed up, it's not funny. Or is it? Well, now, the suggestion there, that was by ES. He was the guy who owned the nofeeboards.com. And his suggestion there is that this is funny in a way. And it is. But it's not funny when boards are destroyed. And ES's board was destroyed. Nofeeboards.com was burned to the ground. So it's not funny. I get the feeling that what ES was doing, you see, ES felt ashamed that he had allowed a lot of these attacks on his own boards. He allowed honest posting, but he also allowed attacks, vicious attacks. And he was ashamed. And this is his way of working it out. He's saying, oh, we should just laugh at these people. You know, they've organized entire websites to block you. We should laugh at them. Well, we should laugh at them, but in order to laugh at them, we have to beat them. You know, as long as they dominate the boards, as long as they are getting what they want, they're the ones laughing. I mean, you know, it's sick, but as long as they're on top, we can't really laugh. We can laugh when we have overcome them, when we have overcome the goons. Comment number 9, this was one by Bill Scholar, the owner of the Early Retirement Forum. For whatever reason, you are leaving a turbulent wake in your path. I use the term turbulent wake deliberately. It's not what you are saying that seems disruptive, but rather all the dialogue that inevitably takes place afterwards. Well, that's a 100% true statement, good statement. I've obviously never said anything in any way, shape, or form, quote, disruptive, except it's disruptive in that the turbulent wake was caused by supporters of John Graney and Mel Lindauer. People, you know, John Graney got the numbers wrong in his retirement study. Mel Lindauer, you know, got some things wrong in his book. And they don't want people to know that. But again, the question is always, you know, we are communities. Humans act in communities. So, you know, why were the Bill Scholars not speaking up when they saw, you know, John Graney used to post at Scholar's discussion board, and Scholar clearly saw how abusive he was. Why was Graney not banned? Why was action not taken? If action had been taken, there never would have been any problem. There never would have been any turbulent wake. People would just, some would dismiss what I said, which is perfectly appropriate, and some would learn. So, I guess what I'm saying is Bill Scholar is giving an intelligent comment here and a good comment, but he failed to act when he had a chance to act. And everybody has a role in the community. You see, we all have a different role. The people I call goons, they have a role. Their role is to argue their case within the rules. That's their role. It's not only that they can do that or that they should be permitted to do that. They should be encouraged to do that. Rob Bennett should be encouraged to make his case as strongly as he can. A community is a mix of opinions. And when one side becomes so dominant that the other side may not exist, and that is the situation we're in, the side that says valuations matter is not permitted to live on the internet. That's unbalanced. And the Bill Scholars, who was obviously the leader of that community, he owned the board, he has a role to defend the minority, and he failed that role. I'm a friend of, I think of, I hope he thinks of me as a friend. I think of myself as a friend of him. But his behavior, you know, leaves a great deal to be desired. He failed in his responsibilities to his board community. Number 10, it seems to me that some on this board feel threatened by the arrival of Hokus and his ideas. They feel a threat to their perceived elite status here. Two common reactions are to debate or attack. Those who choose to attack or do both are straining their credibility. That's Gary Oneputt at Motley Fool. Yes, this is a threat. The biggest issue going on is that people are threatened. Institutional. See, a lot of people would say, hey, you know, these are interesting ideas, Rob, but you're just some guy who posts on the internet. Why should we believe you? And it's a very, very, very good question. That's all I am. Never went to investing school. Never managed a big fund. A flawed human, to be sure. So why listen to Rob Bennett? Well, the one big reason why you should listen to Rob Bennett, there, I just mentioned some why you shouldn't. You shouldn't put too much credibility in anything any one person says. But one reason why you should is the people who advocate passive investing have an institutional interest in defending it. Whether they work for mutual funds or whether they work for the Wall Street Journal or Money Magazine or whether they have calculators on the internet, for all sorts of even ordinary investors. An ordinary investor who has spent 20 years of his life investing passively is emotionally invested. Even if he doesn't have any, you know, he would be better off financially switching, but emotionally it's hard. So there's great institutional power against seeing the flaws in this idea. So most people see them. They suspect them. That's why we get such antagonism. They suspect them, but they don't want them explored. They feel threatened. They feel threatened. And that's, you know, so Gary Oneputt put his finger on it. It's unfortunate that a few posters can cause so much disruption to an otherwise excellent forum. I'm sure that 90%+ of posters here would like to see an end to the disruptive post about Hokus. That's John D. Craig at Vanguard Diehards. I've always wondered whether he's right on that number. John D. Craig's a smart guy. Is it really 90%? I don't think it is quite 90%, but I do think, I don't know, it's certainly a majority. I tend to think maybe 80% would like to see an end. Maybe in the real world it's 90, and on the internet it's 80. I think John D. Craig exaggerated slightly, but I think his point is very well taken. The vast majority would like to see honest posting. I have no doubt in my mind about that whatsoever. That doesn't mean the majority agree with rational investing. They certainly, the majority agrees with passive investing today. That I'm certain also. But they have a mixed view, a healthy mixed view. They are skeptical of the new idea, but they see no reason why discussion of it should not be permitted. Good comment here by Bill Scholar, number 12. Folks, we have a good bit of disruption in the ranks. Some of the disruption is in the form of a Baptist running occasionally into Methodist services and claiming that some of their beliefs are heresy. This seems to generate A, almost zero real dialogue about the merits and demerits of the beliefs, and B, a strange combination of ad hominem attacks and defensiveness. I like that comment so much because Bill is saying that I'm a Baptist running into Methodist services. And the funny thing is, and many people have used that analogy to religion. I've seen that more than a dozen times. It's funny that people are talking about investing, a belief in an investing strategy, as essentially a religious belief. And you know, it's quite right. They say, you know, you should not talk about religion and politics in mixed company. Well, maybe we should add investing strategies to that. If you talk about passive investing among people who know that valuations affect long-term returns, one side's going to be making a case that is so strong, and it's going to cause great defensiveness on the other side. It's dogma. A belief in passive investing is dogma. At least, not everybody. I won't say that every passive investor is dogmatic. That's not true. Many believe in it. Many follow it who don't really believe in it in any sort of dogmatic sense. They believe in it, but, you know, they make exceptions. It's not dogmatic. But the leaders, the people who advocate it, tend to be dogmatic. No question about that whatsoever. It's the most, passive investing generates more dogmatism than any idea I have ever seen. There may be others out there that I don't know about, but yes, the dogmatism is at the religious war level. There are people who would spend their entire lives blocking honest discussion. It's that intense. There's a guy, TH, comment 13. I will point out that roughly 90% of the mess, also known as disruption, came from members other than Hocus. I've actively participated here for a week. Most of the posts are, quote, I can't take this anymore. I'm leaving. I'm retiring. Despite the obvious fact that this feeds the very fear expressed. At this point, I'm already tired of it. Leave already. Well, that's just a good common sense, practical observation. I'm going to skip some. There's some here just saying nice things about me, and I don't know. I feel those served a purpose in putting them in the article so that people know that there are a lot of people out there who really, you know, were excited by these discussions, but I don't feel that, you know, making observations on those would be, you know, all that helpful. Here's one that I was very proud of. A fellow named McDuff says, some of the most helpful and insightful market discussions on the web take place on these pages. Keep up the fine work. I think that comment, my recollection is that comment was directed at John Walter Russell. John is the owner of the Early Retirement Planning Insights website, and he does the statistical work for the calculators. But I found at the Safe Withdrawal Rate Research Group, and it was a wonderful, wonderful board, and John was the one who did most of the posting there, but fantastic work. We saw John doing his work in real time. That's really what that board was all about. And McDuff is just thanking him and saying, you know, this is the best stuff on the internet. And I think he's right. And I'm proud that I didn't do the statistical work, but I founded the board. And so I take some pride in that. Let's see. Well, this is one comment I threw in just to show what the goons are about. I, for one, am against any and all substantive discussions with or about Brickhead, also known as Hocus. I want jihad. I say let loose the dogs of personal attack. The nastier the better, as far as I'm concerned. Well, that's Galano at the Motley Fool, and that gives you an idea of, you know, where the goon mind is. Graney warmly endorsed that. John Graney warmly endorsed that post. Let's see. I'm going to keep going. Yeah, this was a good one. The day that the death threats were made, there was a post by Fool Me Once. It was a fine poster at Motley Fool who said, this will be my last post here. Thanks to all who have engaged in constructive, and the Motley Fool board was at one time, the Retire Early board was at one time the most successful board at Motley Fool. Thanks to all who have engaged in constructive posts on this board over the years. This board has degenerated into something that I can no longer be proud to be involved with. August 30th, 2002. Very sad comment, and I don't know. What makes it especially sad is that Fool Me Once did not stick to that. He did return to that board. In other words, and he got a huge number of recommendations. You know, they have recommendations of posts at Motley Fool, and he got, you know, like 100 or 150. Many, many people felt ashamed of how that board was destroyed. It amazed me. But social stigma is so strong. People couldn't stand to stick their necks out. And, you know, they could wreck the post. They could recommend the post. But they wanted to be in that community, and the community was wonderful. And they'd stick their necks out one time and then drop it. And that happened a lot. And so slowly the goons hold such an advantage because they're ruthless. And the normals, you know, the people who want honest posting just don't have that ruthlessness in them. So it's we have the numbers, you know, 90%, as John D. Craig says, or 80% perhaps, in my estimation, but we have the numbers, but they have the intensity. That's been the rule from the first day. The goon posters have intensity because they have nothing else. With, you know, if they allow honest posting, they don't have arguments. So all they have left is intensity. Their hearts are in the right place, but they're not willing to fight. They're not willing to fight. Remember that poem by Auden, you know, I don't remember the words, but most are sort of confused. You know, he's talking about the second, I think it's called The Second Coming. Most are confused and unsure of themselves, but, you know, I'm quoting it terribly wrong, but the evil have, you know, are filled with a passionate intensity. And yes, I've seen that in discussions of safe withdrawal rates, strangely enough. okay, let's keep moving. Okay, this was a good post here by Ben Solar, where he says we need Motley Fool to step in. That's a good practical suggestion, but I don't think there's anything to be learned from it by quoting it here. I love this one by Catherine Coy at Motley Fool. I emphatically disagree that discussion boards are, quote, just discussion boards. We are flesh and blood people here with goals, aspirations, and feelings. I remember, there was a post that just made my skin crawl once by Drip Guy. He said, everything on the internet is just ones and zeros. You know, so in other words, I have no responsibility to be decent to other human beings. And not the way I think. I see people when I write a post, you know, whether the post is liked or disliked, I imagine people reading it, human beings, flesh and blood human beings, as Catherine Coy points out. And I don't know. That's the way I'm always going to see it. You know, if you say that, you know, why say that about the internet? Not say it about books. Why not just say it's print appearing on pieces of paper? You know, but would anyone say that the words they put in a book don't matter? That's what he's saying, that the words that are posted on the internet don't matter, that there's no requirement to be honest, there's no requirement to be civil, there's no requirement to be warm, there's no requirement to be, you know, caring. What a strange, strange, strange thing. A strange thing. That relates to the last podcast I did, Take Back the Internet. That philosophy is the... I don't know if it's the governing philosophy of the entire internet, but it's the governing philosophy of a significant segment. And boy, does that ever need to change in Rob Bennett's opinion. I like this comment. There was a really good comment here by a guy, New Age 60s, New Age, I may not get it right. It's a bunch of letters and numerals, but it stood for New Age Sensitive 90s kind of guy, something like that. And he posted at Motley Fool, and it's a long post, so I don't want to read the whole thing, but he says, I came here 3 years ago because it was an interesting, educational, informative atmosphere that also had a spirit of community. It would be nice if some of the leaders of the board would get us back in that direction. I tried. When one's philosophy of life is, quote, my way or the highway, he or she usually ends up dying alone. Now, that takes the whole dogmatism of the passive investing philosophy and puts it in very personal terms. And to me, these things are connected. You know, he's saying dogmatics end up dying alone. And, you know, my statement would be passive investing, which is inherently a dogmatic strategy, passive investors end up financially broke, you know. If you believe in something, you know, I don't care if it's investing or anything else, if you believe in something and you're intensely dogmatic about it, to the point where you will shout, you know, obscenities at other people and feel hate and anger, you're hurting yourself, period. I can't think of any exceptions to that. You know, I believe some things are dogmatic. There are truths, you know. But even when it comes to a truth that you believe in, you can state your belief in it in a kind and warm and generous spirited way, and open to, you know, allowing the possibility that you can be wrong. In other words, you can believe something very strongly while also acknowledging I'm flawed and I could be wrong. And when you stop accepting that reality, you've diminished your humanity. So I like that post by New Age, and I think it's an investing issue. You know, people will say that's now you're getting outside of the investing realm, Rob. Well, I don't think so. In any other field, if we saw people behave this way, we'd say there's something wrong with that investing philosophy. But when it comes to investing, we have a hesitance to do that. We feel, oh no, these people, you know, they're smarter than us. They've gone to investing school. They know all the numbers. You know, we can't question them. And I disagree. If they can't make their ideas understood, you know, by everyday people, they've got a problem. And we have every right in the world to point that out. And it's how we all work together to learn. We all have a role. Comment number 35, I now have a little better insight into why Socrates was poisoned. If this forum were a real community, it would be anarchy or mob rule, complete with witch burnings and inquisitions. Well, does that not say it? Does that not tell us there's something wrong with passive investing? Come on, people. Ah, sure does. You know, people say, you know, I often get this comment. People say, well, Rob, you've got to get them to do, you've got to get somebody to do a peer-reviewed study, you know, then everybody will believe you. And I'm like, first of all, there are peer-reviewed studies. Shiller's research is peer-reviewed, and it shows that valuations affect long-term returns. But secondly, is that statement not equal to a peer-reviewed study? If this forum were a real community, it would be anarchy or mob rule, complete with witch burnings and inquisitions. Does that not tell the story that there's something wrong here? Look at that, you know, let's face facts. Doesn't mean the people who came up with passive investing were bad people. Certainly doesn't mean they were dumb. But, you know, it tells us something. It tells us we better stop, think, ponder. Number 37, instead of analyzing the referenced post from the perspective of finance and investing, I look at the post from a social psychology group dynamics point of view. Now, that was a very, very interesting comment by a great poster, Sershnitz. And he says, Rob, at the end, he says, Rob, for a long time, I wondered if you were really a psychologist studying group dynamics. And it's not true, not not in any direct sense, in a literal sense, it's not true that I didn't come in this to study social dynamics. But yes, the social dynamics aspect of this is of great importance. And so I did get to a point where I said, I'm going to continue to post honestly. And if that upsets people, well, I'm not going to allow it to intimidate me. I'm just going to see what happens. Because it's telling me the flaws of this model. It's highlighting all the flaws. And that's the story. The story here, you see, the flaw in passive investing, the root flaw, is that it ignores human emotion, which is the same thing as ignoring valuations. Human emotion is valuation. And that's what we need to learn to change. That's what we got wrong. And so, you know, we don't need to study the numbers, really. I mean, we need the numbers to confirm it. You know, you have to do that. But what we really need to do is to come to an understanding of the emotional reasons why we want to believe in passive investing. It's not hard to disprove passive investing. We did that 30 years ago. The academic research showed valuations affect long-term returns 30 years ago. The question is, why have we spent 30 years living in denial? And so, yes, I do think about it. It's group dynamics that is the issue here. And so Sershnitz is right on. I didn't do that deliberately, but, you know, there's a lot of truth. There's a lot of truth in it. Let's see. Somebody here says, I then, comment 41, I realized just now that Intercost, that's John Graney, had a secret to retiring early he didn't reveal. He freaking invested during the heights of the bull market, and we are in the middle of a bear. Well, that's it. You know, very short summary. Grainy made lots of money because he just happened to accumulate assets at the best time in history for having done so. And he made a lot of money. And a lot of people said, oh, what an expert. What a genius. How brilliant. I want to hear how he retired early so I can do it. Well, you can't repeat what somebody did when it was just pure luck. It's like saying, I'm going to make a guy who won the lottery my guru, and I'm going to listen to all his investing advice. Having accumulating money during the greatest bull market in history doesn't make you an investing guru, but people sure do think it does. There's something in human nature that says, follow those who have been successful, and the ones who have been successful in the bulls are the ones who are going to be the least successful in the secular bear that inevitably follows. So again, this is human psychology. We have something built in us that says we should turn to the worst people for getting investing advice in the world, and we should make them our gurus. And we need to protect ourselves from that. I think the entire idea of what is investing advice about is, how do we overcome that? How do we overcome that? And passive investing does the opposite. Passive investing says, how do we encourage it? Don't fight it. What's the story? If you can't beat them, join them. So what a lot of the passive investing advocates will say is, people are emotional. Investors are emotional. We don't dare tell them the truth. If we told them the truth, they would mess up. They would, if we told them the timing is required for long-term success, they would time the wrong way. They would engage in short-term timing, not long-term timing, and that doesn't work. Well, I think we have to tell people the truth, and we have to make it work. And whatever it takes to make it work, that's what we got to do. But the passive investing, quote, solution to the problem of investor emotion just made people more emotional. It was the worst of all solutions. Comment number 49, John Walter Russell. I put these discussion boards in the hand of the Lord a long time ago. I'm sure everything will work out and the result will be much better than either of us can imagine. This has been my experience. I just don't know what he, speaking of God, has in mind. It will be interesting to find out. Well, John's faith is stronger than my faith, I'm afraid to say. I hope he's right. I certainly have had that experience where God will take a negative situation and turn it into something positive. And there's many cases in history where that's so. So I certainly have hopes that that can happen. I don't say John's wrong, but, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard to believe. Let me go on. This was a guy. Well, there's some comments here by ES. There were several I did in a row because they're heartbreaking. ES spent years building his own discussion board. It was a wonderful board, and it was destroyed by abusive posters who happened to be friends of his. And how sad! And he has some comments there. If you read the article, you can read them, and they'll tear your heart out to think what was done to this guy by people he thought of as friends. Comment 56, Hocus, thank you for so clearly articulating some things that have been in the back of my mind. That was Pat and BJ, Motley Fool, 2002, long time ago. I see that as my job, to articulate things that are in the back of a lot. And I get that comment a lot, actually. I try to articulate things that are in the back of people's minds. Here's a similar comment by Daygrams, also at Motley Fool, May of 2002. 57, quote, comment 57. I don't want to see you leave the board for another extended hiatus. You're clearly on topic. You present alternative ways to think about retirement and planning for it. Your posts are generally a great read, lengthy without being wordy. And you spur serious discussion and disagreement about these topics. As a lurker most of the time, that's where I see the value of this board. Not as a place where we can all get together and extol the virtues of each other in one particular plan, confident and unwavering in our unshaken belief that there is, quote, the way and no other. Where's the fun in that? Daygrams is articulating the normal reaction. This is the normal view. Not persuaded by what I'm saying, but interested in hearing it. He's perfectly articulating it. And as I say, what he's missing here is that the goons have more influence because of their intensity. But he's got the numbers. Daygrams got the numbers, but not the intensity. He's not willing to fight. He's willing to listen, but he's not willing to fight. And, something interesting he is saying is, he says, one thing he says you do is spur discussion. Well, I try to do that. That's a plus. But see, those who are trying to maintain their status as quote-unquote experts, they don't want discussion. They want people patting them on the back. They want praise, not discussion. And where he says, you know, we don't need to be, you know, extol the virtues of each other in one particular plan. Well, some people do want just that. They want a discussion board where everyone will tell them they're right. They want that emotional, you know, satisfaction of everybody saying they're right. That's dangerous. You know, you have to decide, is the purpose of the board to help people invest effectively, or is the purpose of the board to make people feel good? Those are two different purposes. You know, I like people to feel good. I clearly like to be friends with the people I post with, so I'm all for the warmth stuff. But when it interferes with, you know, when it causes busted retirements, you know, count me out. I've got to report the numbers accurately. So you've got to decide, you know, are you serious about the early retirement goal, or is it all just about, I'll tell you you're wonderful if you'll tell me I'm wonderful? You know, that to me is sort of sickening. Andrew 61, also at Motley Fool, June of 2002. I think there's something really important he's trying to tell us, although I don't think he has fully articulated it in his own mind yet. I like that comment because, I mean, it was true. I had not fully articulated it, but that was certainly true in 2002. It's still true today, really. But what I really like is that I think I articulated a lot better than Andrew 61 was suggesting. And the truth is, all humans have a filter on what they will let in. And I call this cognitive dissonance, a term from the psychological literature. Andrew 61 was hearing things, but his mind wouldn't let him hear everything I was saying. And I, you know, his number is in the millions. And we've got to keep that in mind. A lot of us, we tend to think of humans as these rational robots, you know. Give us a logical syllogism and we'll figure everything out. And no, it doesn't work that way. We block out what we don't want to hear, and we live in a fog. And this is everyone. This is Rob Bennett. You know, I'm not holding myself above it. I'm saying we all need to be aware of that. That's why we have the First Amendment, in my opinion. The First Amendment is our protection against living in a fog. Because the First Amendment says no matter how sure you are of yourself, some upstart's going to rise up and question you. But if we stomp that out, if we allow the weakest part, the darkest part of human nature to become dominant and stomp that out, we destroy ourselves, both financially and emotionally and spiritually and in all kinds of ways. Friendship, you know, we destroy friendships. Number 62. This guy says, by way of disclosure, let me say, I tend to skip through most of Hocus's posts because they are long-winded. However, Alan's use of the word irritant made me think of how pearls are formed when an irritant gets into an oyster shell. Not to say Hocus, Rob, is a pearl, but maybe he does get some people to come up with pearls for their replies. Well, I love that, because this guy's name is ID. And ID is saying, I don't like this guy. I think he's long-winded, you know, he goes on and on. I don't need this. But maybe he's causing the people who differ with him to come up with some strong arguments by challenging them. And yeah, that's part of my job too. It's not my job to win these arguments, you know? My job is to present them as best as I can. And if it causes some passive investing advocates to come up with some sharp responses, hey, that's a plus. It's a plus for the whole community. It's a plus for me because it makes me doubt my ideas, which makes me think harder. So I'm proud that, you know, somebody saw me as doing that, you know, even though he doesn't think much of my stuff. As a longtime reader from Motley Fool days, I like Hocus's post and find the hostility to him annoying. As early retirees, we are or early retiree hopefuls, we are already on non-traditional paths. We shouldn't feel threatened by anyone, particularly someone who can represent his or her point of view so well. I, for one, want to keep reading what Hocus puts out, old or new. Please let me. I like that. That was at the early retirement forum. I like that because he's saying early retirees should be a little more open-minded. And boy, do I ever agree. The idea that early retirees would stomp out non-conventional thinking, yuck. You know, what could be more unconventional than the idea of retiring at age 40 or 50? And the same thing with indexers, really. Not as strongly, but indexing is a relatively new idea. Let's not forget, you know, this is not an idea that's been around thousands of years. How can anyone be so confident as some of the indexers portray themselves to be? They're faking it, but they like to pretend that they are. The reality is, no, you know, indexing has been around, what, 30 years? Vanguard was founded in the mid-70s? How can anyone be so certain? Now, here's a guy, Kala Munana at Vanguard Diehards, June 2006. This is not a post that, it's a post that exposes a little bit of the passive investing mindset. That's why I included it. Number 64. Reading so many hocus riddled threads is like being cyber stalked by a cult leader on a perpetual mission to recruit his following. Sickeningly sweet and polite. He's a con artist who's letting others do the dirty work for him. Do you get that, John D. Craig? This is your role in the long-term HOCO plot to take over this board. Hard to believe? Yes. If you don't know what skillful, passive-aggressive power brokers are capable of. I guess he means to say, if you don't know what skill they are capable of. At this point, it doesn't even look like Hocus is running an underhanded smear campaign against Mel, Taylor, and other so-called, quote, big shots, right? It looks like the debunkers are to blame for the ruckus and subsequent polarization of the board into two camps. Like I said, skillful. Well, he's had a lot of practice at all those other boards where he's been banned. Well, I think that's a sincere post. I think it's good that he posts what he believes, but I think there's anger in that post. There's defensiveness. There's this feeling that I am threatening, quote, the powers that be. And I am threatening the powers that be, but I don't threaten them in any sort of mean-spirited way. I want to be friends with them, but I want them to get it right. I'm helping them. And, is there a HOCO plot to take over the board? Well, there's definitely a HOCO plot to change the power structure so that those who understand the effective valuations on long-term returns are able to speak their piece and not be attacked or punished for doing so or banned or silenced. So in that sense, there's a HOCO plot. Never had anything against John Graney or Mel Lindau or anyone else, but I sure did have something against the idea that it's safe for middle-class investors to stay at the same stock allocation regardless of how dangerous stock investing gets. That would be fair to say. Here's a guy, Focus, again, at the Vanguard Diehards. These diehards have no interest in discussing anything substantial. Their goal is to shut down any discussion about anything that does not follow the party line. Their tactic is to get you bogged down debating meaningless and irrelevant minutiae so that the original topic is forgotten. When they have no argument, they resort to name-calling and personal attacks. This has been played out over and over again. Just try discussing Dan Wiener. I think Dan Wiener has a newsletter about Vanguard funds. In one instance, a diehard contacted a poster's employer and tried to get him fired. Once again, the diehards disgraced themselves. Well, I think that's a very good post. He's right on. What he's saying is true. I've seen this behavior. But so sad. Because, the ideas of passive investing, while the passive investing idea itself is horrible, there are a lot of ideas in that package that are wonderful, gold. The idea not to, to tune out the short-term noise is gold. The idea to focus on the long-term is gold. The idea to keep costs low is gold. The idea to invest in indexes is gold. The idea that the stock market is the best place for the middle class to earn wealth is gold. We need to destroy ourselves this way? In other words, the Focus is sort of attacking diehards in that comment, and rightly so. However, I think of myself as a diehard. I believe in indexing. So it hurts me that my fellow community members have gone down the path that he is describing accurately. It's very sad. Sad for Bogle more than anyone else, but sad for all of us. Sad for the entire middle class in America, in the United States. Here's a guy says a similar comment, Werman. He says, the diehard mentality has done more to discourage investing dialogue and an open exchange of ideas than any other philosophy I know of. I only wish he had said the passive investing mentality, because that's the root of it. The reason why we get this defensiveness is because passive investing cannot be defended. People are defensive and they engage in attacks because it is emotionally vacant, intellectually vacant, I should say, intellectually vacant. The idea that valuations do not affect long-term returns is nuts. The price you pay always affects the long-term value proposition of anything you buy. Therefore, it is illogical, it is irrational not to change your stock allocation when stocks go to insanely dangerous price levels. So says Rob Bennett. An interesting one. Let me see. Yeah, this is an interesting one from Ernabuck at Vanguard Diehards. He says, a few years ago when Motley Fool boards were free, I followed these discussions. I actually was on the side of Grainy regarding the 4% safe withdrawal rate based on historical. I actually think I now lean towards Rob's view that you have to consider the starting point. While Intercost was busy making fun of Rob, he kept putting out information that may prove extremely painful for those who took his safe withdrawal rate as gospel. Boy, an important. What I love about that comment is Ernabuck is not saying he agrees with me. He's saying he leans toward my position on safe withdrawal rates, but in other comments he said he disagrees with my general point on valuations. He's not a valuation-informed indexer, but he does lean toward what I'm saying on safe withdrawal rates. And he's been following the debate for years. It shows that being exposed to an argument one time does not change your life, your beliefs. Human beliefs change slowly and gradually. And this is why we must have discussions. Only through discussions of the flaws of the passive investing model will we ever get this model overturned. It cannot be done by somebody presenting a peer-reviewed study. As I say, they exist already. The problem is people don't talk about them because people filter them out. They're painful to look at. What we need is discussion, and we need everybody involved, and we need civil and reasoned discussion, and it needs to be, you know, a national debate, including the big names like Bogle, including the passive investors, but also including those who challenge passive investing. Rob Bennett is one, but we also need Jeremy Grantham and, you know, on and on and on, Ed Easterling and Cliff Asness and, you know, on and on, John Walter Russell. Comment 69. Another comment that reflects poorly on the passive investing model and makes me sad because I believe in so much of what Bogle did. On the diehard forum, humility seems to be a one-way street. Microlepsis comment. Anyone accusing Bogle of being wrong is expected to be humble, but anyone criticizing someone who suggests that some active managers might actually be adding value or suggesting that some forms of long-term market timing might actually work is treated as virtuously exposing a heretic who is stupidly ignoring the great weight of, quote, scientific evidence. Never mind that the evidence is inconclusive and ambiguous. We also see posts stringing together quotations from, quote, experts, and are supposed to believe this somehow proves a controversial point beyond dispute. Never mind that there are also experts who take contrary positions and that point out ambiguities and complexities in the evidence. Sorry, Taylor. The reference is to Taylor Larimore, co-author of The Bogleheads Guide to Investing. But I don't see much evidence of humility or open-mindedness on the part of many diehards, including some of the leaders of this forum. Well, that needed to be said. That's the straight story, no chaser, and congratulations to Microlepsis for saying it. He's a stand-up guy. Good comment on response to that by a guy named Uphaus. Perhaps you all, including the invited speakers, are comfortable with such a version of a restricted covenant. But what it tells me is there is a blackball procedure, which I find morally disquieting. The very idea that Jack Bogle's safety or anyone else's would be an issue puzzles me. And the notion that the invited speakers need to be, quote, protected from disagreement really is astonishing. I mistakenly thought we were all grown-ups who know the rules of civilized discourse. Please don't level your attack at Rob, whom I do not know. This is me speaking, and I feel downright ashamed of the language of Mel 65. Well, Mel's comment number 65. Well, you know, great comment. There should have been 100 people making that comment. In a healthy community, there would have been 100 people. What's happened is the community is self-selected. These goons, the thugs, the internet predators, select the community by when they silence people, when they ban one person, 100 people leave. Microlepsis was one of the most popular posters in that community. John D. Craig was one of the most popular posters in that community. They were banned, and hundreds of people left, and that makes it easier for the thugs to work, you know, their so-called magic. Downside of the internet, the ugly side of the internet, It pretends it's a Potemkin village. It becomes a Potemkin village where it the appearance is given that different viewpoints can be expressed, but the reality is no. The reality is no. Shocking comment here by Petroselli, number 73. What bothers me is the double standard which squelches opposing views. A couple years ago, I was posting returns of various portfolios and comparing them to Dan Wiener's portfolio. I was interested in seeing whether Dan Wiener could beat the market. An influential poster called Morningstar and complained. I then received a telephone call from Morningstar at my office asking that I not post Dan Wiener's returns. It was emphasized that I was not violating any rules, but that it was requested that I should stop posting because it was upsetting a few other posters. I don't know who complained, but I imagine it was someone with a lot of juice if they could persuade Morningstar to call me. That is sick. That is corrupt. That is corruption. And I had a comment like that. I think it was Drip Guy told me when I started posting at Vanguard, he said, Mel Lindauer and Taylor Larimore, they have a lot of juice. They're going to get you banned, Rob. You just wait and see. Well, I thought that was a deeply cynical comment, a deeply disrespectful comment to the individuals named, a deeply disrespectful comment to Morningstar that they'd be involved in such an operation, and a deeply disrespectful comment to the entire Vanguard diehards community, which I think is a wonderful community, and the evidence supports it. But a deeply cynical, ugly comment that, frankly, proved to be accurate. They did have the juice. They did have the juice to succeed. And what does that say about the quote-unquote idea that they were quote-unquote defending with these tactics? Another Sershnitz comment, if you want to understand the dynamics of what happened here, you need a model for understanding. I suggest you use cult as a model. The use of a cult model for the diehards explains the situation more completely than any other model I can imagine. A cult may be tolerant of outsiders because it sees in them potential converts. But two things can change this tolerance of outsiders to rage. The first is criticism of the central figurehead. The second is a threat to the hierarchy. In Rob's case, both of these conditions were met. Well, okay. He's right. And I make no apologies. Bogle needs to be told when it gets things wrong, in Rob Bennett's opinion. And the hierarchy needs to be told when it engages in the sort of corrupt behavior described in that earlier post mentioned just above. And somebody needs to call them on it. And, you know, unfortunately, it was left to me. I didn't ask for that job, but it was left to me. I liked it. I like this post by Soaring. He says, it was number 76. It was totally wrong to ban Rob, and I said so when asked before. I began reading this Morningstar forum about 6 to 8 months ago and quickly learned that valuations matter, and yes, from Rob. But I read others to validate my new thoughts on the matter. You see, a lot of people, they have a vague idea that valuations matter. But as I say, the way human beings think is they have to think it over a bit. And that's how we learn. I make this point all the time, but I make it because I feel like so many people don't really understand it. We don't learn from hearing a logical syllogism one time. We hear from pondering things day by day. And that's how passive investing became popular. It was pushed on us for decades in radio, television, newspapers, speeches. And it's going to take years or possibly decades to move to the rational model. But the sooner we get started, the better. And we can't start without being able to post honestly. That is the first step. That's the first baby step. Here's a quote that is shocking by Mel Lindauer. Vanguard monitors this forum on a regular basis at a very high level, so the higher-ups do indeed know exactly what's going on here. That's not good. It's not good. That's true. I love this comment by Daryl44. I have seen many rip Rob, but truthfully, I don't understand what the counter-argument is. Is there a counter-argument? There is no logical counter-argument, I can say, after 7 years. There is none. There's just emotion. That's all there is. on passive investing. Micro, I am going to finish up, I promise, but there's a couple more comments I just have to get in. Microlepsis. Go back 100 years in finance and many other disciplines and examine the academic studies of that era. You will see they are often riddled with assumptions, theories, and analysis that are now considered to be wrong or even ridiculous. 100 years from now, people will likely view the studies upon which we rely in the same light. So true. Passive investing was based on academic research, and it was an advance. That academic research generated thousands of valuable insights, but it has been proven wrong. It has been discredited, and we need to start moving away from it. And science is not. You prove something and you never look at it again. Science means you have to remain open to new ideas. That's part of what it means to be quote unquote scientific. It's just part of what it means. I like this comment from Chipmunk. I'll venture a regular guy opinion. I will say that Rob's explanation does make sense. However, no one can predict the future. Just when someone uses history to try to backtest, create a model, and then predict the future, the factors change or new factors emerge. That's a common sense viewpoint. It is a regular guy opinion. I say you can predict the future, and I try to explain why, but you can only predict the long-term future, not the short-term future. But that's what people need to come to understand, and they're not going to understand it in one day. It really is going to take time for that to sink in. You need to study this from different angles. But great comment. That's a sincere, helpful, skeptical comment. I love this comment from Janie. What Rob said sounds reasonable enough, so I wouldn't be able to judge his advice without additional input. I must rely on the fact that I don't hear the authors I trust saying the same thing. You see, we need to hear this from more than one person. The authors I trust seem to agree that returns may be lower in years to come, but none of them suggest we should drastically reduce our stock allocations in light of this information. I don't have time to join the search for the grail of investing. Besides, I have other priorities in life, so I have to rely on the judgment of people who make the most sense. Well, that's totally reasonable and understandable, and I think there are millions that think as Janie does. But only by challenging these experts are we ever going to find out if their ideas stand up to scrutiny. So again, opening the internet to honest posting is the beginning. If all he thought was that the market is a bit overvalued and we are probably in for a period of below average returns, there would be no controversy. His views go way beyond that. He claims that the entire industry is wrong, and he, as founder of the new school, has the quote correct answers. Well, again, that's a common sense viewpoint. It's hard to believe that, some guy on the internet is basically developing a new model of investing. I mean, skepticism is called for. Skepticism is 100% appropriate. But, sometimes experts really get something wrong, and all I've really done is just to develop to the extent of my ability. I've developed it. I don't want to be left with the responsibility of developing those ideas. I want millions of people involved. So please don't say that I ever wanted to take credit or do all the work or anything like that. I don't want that. I want John Bogle involved. I want all these people involved. I want Mel Lindauer involved if he can post civilly. So my contribution, I hope, when history is written, will be that I get that debate started. I hope that happens. The last post in the article 101 is a slow process at Motley Fool, November 2002. Post on Hocus. I think that's important because the people who post the realities, the people who stick their necks out, the people who take on the bricks that are thrown at them. I don't mean this just about me, but I mean it about everybody. There are thousands of people who have expressed a desire that honest posting be permitted. They are heroes. They're pioneers. And we all need emotional support from our fellow humans. And these people need to hear that they are appreciated, that they are loved, that they are welcomed. That's what needs to change. We need to get past this thing where people say, maybe we'll tolerate a contrary viewpoint every now and then, but we really sort of hate your guts, low life worm. What we need to do is to say, hey, the message needs to be, hey, we don't agree today, but we sure like having you around because you're helping us to think more clearly. I'd say not just me, but all the thousands who have expressed a desire for honest posting. That's the tone we need. So when this fellow says post on Hocus, he's encouraging, he's warm. And that's what we need, and we need to do that across the board. We need to all stick up for our fellow community members and encourage honest discussion evaluations on the internet. Come on, people, let's get with it. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.